This is a public service announcement sponsored by Just Blaze and the good folks at Rockefeller Records.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is Ho. H to the O-V. I used to move snowflakes by the O-Z. I guess even back then you could call me CEO.
Welcome into another edition of the Make a Bootleg podcast presented by the Boston Herald. I'm your host, Evan Lazar. Alongside me, as always, Adam Kirchin. And Adam, the Patriots finally put together a full team effort and get us a blowout signature win that we're accustomed to seeing this time of year once the weather starts to get a little bit colder. Everything went the Patriots' way in this game. A fumbled punt, a blocked punt, a kick return TD. Even Dwayne Allen got his first catch of the season off the schneid. So it was all Patriots on Sunday night.
Yeah, I thought they played really well. I thought it was, you put it up there next to the Falcons games in terms of their best games this year. I think one of the weird things that I've noticed recently is their defense is playing fine even without Hightower. Their defense keeps getting better. Gilmore came back and it really didn't mess things up in terms of defensive breakdowns in terms of the secondary. I think that's all those problems are sort of ironed away. There are still things you can quibble with, like we were talking before and we'll get to later, but the other thing I thought was interesting is that I think this is kind of the offense that people were hoping to see once Edelman went down, is using the running backs as receivers a lot, getting a lot of tight ends involved, even though people didn't tell us Bennett coming back. It looked diverse. I mean, the running game was great. It looks tough for anybody to stop. And I know the Broncos defense didn't play well the week before, so you can say that. But this looked like a complete Patriots team.
Yeah, I think that we've kind of been calling for it, especially the last 4 weeks. But this was about as good as it gets in terms of a Josh McDaniels game, I thought. Just a fantastic coaching job, really on both sides of the ball, but specifically offensively. Manipulating matchups, using formations to their benefit, and really forcing this game away from the strength of the Broncos defense, which is, with those cornerbacks. Aqib Talib, Chris Harris were almost like they weren't even out there at times because the Patriots just weren't even interested in attacking them anyways. And you kind of got to see what a Gronk Cooks duo out there at the same time can really do to defenses and really manipulate defenses that way. This was one of the better games that Gronk has had all year, in my opinion, just watching it back and seeing the coverage that he drew play in and play out. I mean, there's plays where there's two, three guys, all over him, and it's just opening up the entire rest of the field. The touchdown to Burkhead was a good example of that. The catch that Burkhead had, he took three guys with him, and it just left Burkhead alone on a safety in the middle of the field, and it was easy pickings for Brady. So I thought that those two guys, even though the numbers weren't necessarily off the charts, but I thought that Cooks and Gronk were really huge factors in this game in terms of manipulating coverage. And I really thought that McDaniels called a nice game too.
I totally agree. And I think another thing you take away from this is how well the offensive line played. I think it can be hard to be blocking offensive line and run blocking offensive line, but they seemed equally up to the task. This game, at least, they really, I mean, the way that they established the run and sort of stuck to it and was able to sort of push around the Broncos surprised me, frankly, because I don't think you see that a lot with that team. And, you've seen it the last few weeks. It's gotten better and better. And then, Lewis has had a nice game. Burkhead had a nice game. They used both of them. They used the I formation really well. The more they're able to do that, the more it's able to open up things for the passing game. And it really felt like they were able to do whatever they wanted. Now, it's not going to be that easy once you get to the playoffs and the toughest defenses they'll face. But, I don't know how you can look at what they did on offense and really pick apart any problems. I mean, look at Adrian Waddle coming in. at right tackle and really holding his own and playing about as well as you can expect for a backup right tackle. I mean, that's a huge development for that team.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's everybody's to blame here with this one, but I think that we all get caught up a little bit in this matchup with the Broncos and didn't look at it in terms of what this Broncos team has done this year or what they are this year on paper. And we're kind of looking at it as a historic rivalry that the Patriots and Broncos have had over the last couple years. This seemed to me like a really different Broncos defense, especially in the front seven. Von Miller is really the pass rush, you know, weapon that they have, and that's about it outside of him. Especially in this game, it really felt like they really had no other answer besides Von in terms of rushing Brady. And even Von, they dropped him into coverage a whole bunch, which I thought was super weird. And some of the coaching decisions on both sides of the ball that the Broncos made really – that coaching matchup between Vance Joseph and Belichick and the Patriots staff and the Broncos staff really reared its head in every shape and form in this game, special teams, both sides of the football. I mean, it was a clinic in terms of coaching. You know, basically they took the rookie head coach to school a little bit in this game. And I think it really showed on the offensive side of the ball, especially, and the way that they were able to just spread the Broncos out in the passing game and just pick apart, you know, okay, we got Burkhead on a safety here. We have Gronk on, you know, getting bracketed, but he's got open coverage here. Tlaib and Harris, you guys stay on the outside and we're going to just throw the ball right between the numbers right at you. Then the run game kind of got going a little bit, like you mentioned, and then the play action game off of that, Gronk's biggest catch of the day, the linebackers just absolutely jumped it, thinking it was a run on a play action. And Brady's obviously pretty good at selling those. And the whole, you know, middle of the field just vacated wide open for Gronkowski. And he ended up breaking that tackle on the safety and running for a little bit extra yardage there. So it was, you know, with in terms of the offensive line, I thought it was a good game. I thought the Broncos played in their hands a little bit. Von Miller, I didn't think was quite as dangerous as he has been in past games against the Patriots because of his usage. So that's an interesting thing to monitor in terms of the way that the Broncos head from here, who are kind of, you know, Adam, like, falling apart at the seams here. We talked about it a little bit last week after they got blown up by the Eagles looking ahead to this game. But after this game, it really feels like this Broncos team is teetering. I mean, they don't have a quarterback. They have a rookie head coach who hasn't really coached very well in the last, you know, month or so. They don't really have any options on offense outside of Demaryius and Emmanuel Sanders. You know, this Broncos team all of a sudden is heading for a rebuild, it looks like.
Yeah, it really does, and it really goes to show how things are in this league. Even like the Broncos were so steady. I mean, they were talking about it on the broadcast, and then I just went looking at all the teams from the past, you know, 25, 30 years that have made it to the Super Bowl out of the AFC East or out of the AFC. And it's just like a handful of teams.
Yeah.
You know, one of those teams. And so you never really expect them to sort of fall, but it's really falling apart bad. Like, I mean, situation, I don't know how you solve that this quickly. The coaching situation is really bad. I mean, it feels like the players don't really even have any confidence in Joseph right now. And they need sort of they need to sort of hit the reset button, which is really strange because they just did that. And you would think it would be, a smoother transition because it's not like they don't have good players. But I think, you know, I don't know, they need to – I mean, even some of the young guys I like, you know, like Simmons, I thought had a great game for a defense that got torched. You know, the safety there, he was – I know he had a good career at BC, but – you know, he's coming in and he's knocking heads around and he looked like a physical good safety, but you know, I really do think a lot of it's just coaching. I mean, was a defensive coordinator at the Dolphins last year and the defense wasn't good.
It was a weird hire to begin with.
It was a very weird hire. And so, and then like just everything that they don't really seem to have, they don't even seem to be able to have a confidence in their coach right now. It just seems to be like from the top down, just sort of this feeling, and it's falling apart fast. So, you know, things, it's just very strange. It's like seeing, it would be like seeing, you know, say Belichick retires and they hire somebody and the Patriots went like 5-11 or something. You know, this is kind of
Yeah. And before we'll move over to the defensive side of the ball here in a second, but just last thing on the offense, I just really felt like the Broncos just kind of let it happen to them.
Right.
On defense, you know, they knew about 10 minutes into this game, into the first quarter, after they fumbled that punt and the Patriots got the ball back and scored, they knew what the game plan was from a Patriots perspective, was to get matchups on the safeties and linebackers for the running backs and get Gronkowski going. They have players in their secondary, notably Aqib Talib. If I was the Broncos, Aqib Talib would have been on Gronkowski the entire game. You know, the Patriots used to do stuff like that with him when he was here. I remember him playing up against Jimmy Graham and a couple other examples where, yeah, he's a corner, he's an outside corner, but you got to play the opponent. You know, you got to play the team that you're going up against. Instead, they allowed, you know, some of their depth safeties and linebackers to just kind of bracket Gronkowski in there, and the Patriots were able to manipulate the coverages with formations basically by stacking receivers on one side of the field. And it freed up everything for Gronkowski in the middle, because you have Cooks on the outside who's really presenting a vertical threat that this team has never had before. And I know the numbers, you know, he doesn't have that big game yet. So the numbers aren't quite, you know, what we might have expected. But really, in terms of just X's and O's, and when you watch the game tape back, you know, his presence alone on the field is just undeniable. And then that really, you know, trickles down to the other positions. And I really just thought that in terms of the Broncos defense, you know, they really didn't have any answers or change anything, really make any adjustments to kind of slow this team down. They kind of just let it happen to them. And that points at coaching. And that's something that, you know, just separates Belichick and McDaniels and Patricia and the coaching staff in New England, you know, so much from a coaching staff like Denver. And I think that we touched on it a little bit last week going into this game about the coaching mismatch, but I think it was even bigger than we had anticipated for these teams. And it kind of take for granted, you know, as a Bronco, from a Broncos perspective, you know, how good of a coach Gary Kubiak and John Fox really were when they were there. You know, Kubiak especially, I thought, was a very, you know, had the ship pointed in the right direction all the time, so to speak. And, you know, that was a big part of it. But let's move over to the defense side of the ball, because, you know, it wasn't really Brock Osweiler who lost in this game. You know, Brock was okay. He didn't really turn the ball over. And, you know, it wasn't an awful performance from him. But as you mentioned, the secondary just looks like this is the strength. If they have a strength on defense, it's going to be the secondary. I think that we thought that heading into the season. And then, you know, Gilmore came back and played a pretty good game. I thought it played really well, actually, and really took Demaryius Thomas out of this game completely. Butler had his issues, obviously, but when I watched it back, it was really I thought that Butler was trying too hard to pick off Osweiler a little bit and got caught a couple times looking back into the backfield and trying to read his eyes and lost Sanders on a couple of different routes. So the secondary overall, though, I mean, I don't know how elite of a pass defense this can be with the pass rush, and we're going to get to the pass rush in a second, but in terms of just the talent in the secondary and the way that they can really match up against other teams across the board, it's a nice little group that they have all of a sudden.
Yeah, I agree. I don't, you know, I think some of Butler, like you said, I think some of Butler's struggles were a little overblown, because some of them were good coverage, but just great plays by Sanders. That one play where he sort of jumped the route by the sideline and it got to Sanders and went right by him, you know. There were a couple times he got straight beat, but, you know, I think the biggest worry from that game was Malcolm Butler. You're sitting in pretty good position, because I don't see him as, you know, corner just because he got beat by Emmanuel Sanders a couple times in that game. Gilmore looked good. The safeties, for the most part, have been strong. Like you said, with the secondary, I think it's rounding into form. You know, who knows when we'll see the field again. But I think this, I mean, you'll have Bautamosi you know, in the stable when you need him. You know, I in general, like, you know, they, you know, and it's easy to take for granted what they do in the red zone on defense, but, you know, again, to field goals with this offense, that's all you really need to do. If this offense continues to play like this, you can give them as many yards as you want, but if they don't get in the end zone, you're fine. You're golden.
Yeah.
Team's not going to score, you know, 30 points on 10 field goals, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the Broncos actually scored points on four of their first five drives in this game, but they kicked a bunch of field goals. And the red zone defense over the last 5 weeks is down to about 36% in the red zone touchdown conversions. The first four games of the season, it was up near 70. So a huge turnaround there. And we talk about it all the time, and it sounds cliche at this point, the bend but don't break philosophy that the Patriots have kind of adopted here. But in reality, you know, when you have Tom Brady, it's a really good strategy. I mean, you're going to hold the other team. If you keep on keeping them out of the end zone and make them kick some field goals, extra field goals, you're going to hold them into that low 20s, you know, high teens range almost every single game. And you're going to really like your odds there with Brady going, you know, up against the defense to put up more points than that. So, you know, as much as, you know, it can be frustrating at times that they give up some of these chunk plays and they don't get much pressure and they give all these quarterbacks all the time in the world to find receivers, you know, the day it's strategy. And we wanted to talk about the pass rush so we can get into it. And, you know, I feel like I'm beating a dead horse with the pass rush, to be honest, because I just keep repeating it. This is a strategy that they're implementing here. I don't like it. I don't think a lot of people like it, because they'd much rather they see these other teams that have elite, you know, pass defenses really get after the quarterback and really put pressure on the quarterback. This Broncos team hasn't done it as well this year as they have in years past. A big reason why they haven't been as good, but they are, you know, kind of the hallmark of that. The Seattle Seahawks are kind of the hallmark as well. Two teams that have always had good pass rushes, and really it's underrated how much that feeds into the pass defense. But the Patriots, you know, it's not that. It's not, they have a very good secondary that plays, you know, on one string for most of this game. And mainly the pass rush, you know, they're going to rush three, they're going to rush four guys. We talked about it, you know, even when they blitz, they're only blitzing an extra guy at a time. It's not like they're bringing the house on any of these plays. You know, it's frustrating to watch. They lead the league in three-man pass rushes, which drives me crazy, but you know, that's just the way that they're going to go with this, it seems, moving forward. And you can't argue with the results. That, you know, it's the same old thing. We can question Belichick as much as we want, but then the results at the end of the day is they end up going 13-3 and they're a top 10, you know, scoring defense.
Yeah, it's funny, and I think part of it too, you're seeing Trey Flowers being dropped into coverage more than ever now. And you know, right now, is he your best pass rusher? Probably. You know, with Hightower out, you don't see Hightower out there, obviously, because he's injured. So it's a strategy, like you said. And, you know, is Wise going to step it up a little bit more? You know, they seem to like to send Van Noy every now and then off the edge. And then they'll move him to the middle and send him up. But like we were talking about earlier, it's five guys at the most. They don't sort of believe, it seems like, in outnumbering the offensive line and forcing the quarterback to get rid of it quick. That's just not their style right now, and it does seem to be a lot like last year in some respects, when they just sort of kept everything in front of them, allowed yards but not points. And so you know, but like we were saying, like last year at a certain point, I think it was after the eighth or ninth game, their pass rush really took off, and so we're at that point in the season again this year. Will it do the same thing? I'm not totally convinced that it will. You know, I just don't see that sort of commitment to, you know, blitzing and bringing pressure the same way they did last year. But the thing is I think Flowers has done a nice job dropping into coverage some of these times. I think he's I've always thought he's athletic enough to do it. They just didn't really use him in that role. But he's pretty good at it. I mean, he's an athletic guy. He's big. He has a great nose for the ball. So if you can use him in that aspect and, you know, maybe lose one of your best pass rushers on third down when you're doing that, then that's a fine trade-off, you know, because it's rare to have a guy who can do that well.
Right. Yeah. I think Flowers is unfortunately has become kind of part of the Hightower replacement, you know, group. He's probably the best guy that they have in terms of setting the edge and playing a little bit out in space and coverage like Hightower used to do that role as the outside linebacker. As much as I would love to see him with his hand in the ground rushing the passer all the time, you know, just with the personnel that they have, him and Van Noy are really the two guys that you trust the most, I would say, to kind of play that Hightower role. So it's kind of put on him to do it, which, you know, isn't great for the pass rush, but at the same time, it's worked out nicely so far. And they talked about a little bit on the Sunday night telecast, talking to Flowers about, you know, him now playing a little bit more with his hand, you know, off the ground and playing more as an outside linebacker on the edge. And, you know, it's different and a lot of different things, as he said, you know, they're asking him to do a lot of different things in terms of dropping into coverage and really setting an edge instead of rushing the passer. But at the same time, you know, he's just a super talented guy and a football player that has a really high football IQ as well. So, you know, I think that he can handle it. But in terms of, I feel like their goal is really to, first of all, to keep quarterbacks in the pocket, because I think that they truly believe, and this is backed up with stats, that it's just much harder to drive on a defense consistently when you consistently have to make throws from the pocket. Not a lot of quarterbacks can do it. You know, you have a few guys that can do it on a consistent basis. You know, your Brady's, your Drew Brees's, Aaron Rodgers, those types of guys. But if you look at the next level of quarterback, almost all of them are better when they have a little bit of improvisation thrown in there. A guy like Carson Wentz, a guy like Dak, even guys like Brock Osweiler. You get Brock Osweiler to, you know, kind of be stuck in the pocket, but at the same time not be on his exact spot, and then you take away his first read, and now all of a sudden you're turning him into a limited quarterback. You know, and that was kind of the strategy that I thought that they really implemented in this game. They fired some linebackers up the middle. They moved Brock off his spot a little bit. They did some stunts and twists on the inside to kind of move the pocket while still keeping him at bay. And then they took away that first read, and all of a sudden now Brock is just – he's got time, but he's just standing there with nobody open and no real ability to get onto that second or third read. And it also helps when you don't really have anybody outside of, you know, two guys that can really catch a pass. So I think that was really what it is. And as much as, you know, all those fancy stats like from Next Gen or Pro Football Focus that are going to suggest, you know, the Patriots have a very bad pass rush. They don't get a lot of pressure. The percentage of time that they get pressure is towards the bottom five of the league. All that stuff is true. But I think a lot of it is just they're choosing to do that based on their personnel because they know that they don't have an elite pass rushing group necessarily or a lot of talent in the front seven to do it. So instead they're just kind of manipulating things where we're going to basically move you like a chess piece. You're going to move here. The secondary is going to move there. And, you know, it's going to take away what you want to do. And we're going to make you beat us by doing your secondary option, your third option, you know, the stuff that you're not game planning to do when you come into the game. I think that is really, you know, the number one thing that most defenses do that are good defenses are, can you get your teams, your opponent out of their script that they came into the game planning to do? Right. Can you get them to that second or third plan at B or C, if you will, to try to kind of throw them off their game a little bit? And although Osweiler wasn't awful in this game, he certainly wasn't the reason why they got blown out. You know, he wasn't going to put together enough points because of the way that the Patriots defense played them, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Right. And I think that's, I mean, if you really boil it down, that's pretty simple. You know, the hardest thing a quarterback can do, the biggest struggle for any quarterback, is taking off that first read and going to a second and, you know, cycling through reads like that and finding the open guy. And if the Pats are forcing guys to do that, which they are, you know, then it's playing into the defense's hands. So, yeah, I think they do a good job of that in general, taking away what the other team does best. And so far it's a winning formula. Now, you know, will that hold up against a team or a player who can take advantage of that strategy. Now, you know, at some point, you're going to need a pass rush, but it really is going to come down to, you know, limiting big plays, keeping teams, you know, out of the end zone when they get into the red area, and sort of situational stuff like that. But, you know, like we were talking about earlier with the offense, they have, defense has to be good enough. It doesn't have to be, the Bears or anything like that.
And last year it was like, you know, all year long, we just heard about how the number one scoring defense label that they had or they had earned was fake, you know, essentially because of their opponents or whatever reason. You know, Football Outsiders had them as the 20th best defense, but they had the number one scoring defense or, you know, whatever it was. And, you know, now it's kind of like, well, they won the Super Bowl anyways. So, right. Yeah, it's like, how often do I have to hear that, oh, well, they played the Jets, the Bucks, the Chargers, the Broncos. Yeah, I understand that these are bad offenses. I'm not defending them in any way, saying that the Patriots are going out and stopping the 2000 Rams in these games. But at the same time, you know, you play who you play. You know, you play who the schedule makers ask you to play. And in the playoffs, I mean, happen too, and they'll probably have similar success, I would guess, and we're going to be in a situation where they're probably in the AFC Championship game again, and it's a coin toss at that point, you know, which way it's going to go, and in the Super Bowl too if they're lucky enough to get there. So we can sit here and say that this defense, they did give up some yards to the Broncos. The Broncos were able to move the ball, they were able to run the ball a little bit, but at the same time, you know, it's all well and good when at the end of the day they only have 16 points. You know, it's kind of to the point now where I feel like we're nitpicking so much because we just want Belichick to like be wrong about something every once in a while. You know, it's like every time there's a trade or there's a roster move that that fans can nitpick at, Jamie Collins, Chandler Jones, right. You know, what have you, Belichick gets ragged on for it because it's like, when is this guy going to ever make a mistake?
Yeah.
You know, with the defense, it's the same thing. It's like, oh yeah, well, you know, they have held the opponent to 17 points or less in 5 straight games, but look at who they've played. I mean, that's the real story here. It's like, it's the same thing all over again, but, you know, it felt good to finally see this year's team where it kind of looked a little rocky there in September like it sometimes does. But this year it did feel, I think we can all admit, that it felt a little bit different years past, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Here they are, 7-2 with another kind of signature blowout win in November. Every year it kind of seems like they have one of these wins where they play a team that are either historically a playoff team like the Broncos or a team that's, you know, has a good record, and they just blow the doors off of them in November or early December. And, you know, we're reminded once again that the Patriots are headed back to the playoffs and have as good of a chance as anyone, probably the favorites in the AFC at this point.
Right. And so I guess that segues nicely into the next game against the Raiders. Because the way I look at it, even though the Raiders don't have a great record, and this, we've been talking about this too, is I still think they're a team that's going to probably be in the playoffs and a team that's going to be a tough out in the playoffs. So so long as Carr stays healthy and their main guys stay healthy. Because I think they have, you know, way more talent than some of these teams that are – you know, in the mix. Like, I mean, we saw Buffalo beat them, and we knew Buffalo had a good record, and they're just sort of falling apart. The Raiders, you know, they have Khalil Mack, they've got Derek Carr, they've got Marshawn Lynch, they've got, you know, Amari Cooper. They've got the guys, and they've got a big offensive line that can push teams around. So, you know, I think this week is almost even – is in some ways, you know, a bigger game. I still think it's one of the games of the year when you look at their schedule. It's in Mexico City, you know, incredible atmosphere it's going to be. And, you know, you look at the Raiders, and this is a team with a good quarterback, with a lot of good weapons, and a defense that isn't necessarily great or anything, but has an elite pass rusher, probably the best in the game. You can quibble over who's the best, but, I mean, he's right there. and Khalil Mack. So this is, you know, this is a good, another good litmus test to see it, you know, how far the team's come.
Yeah, I think that the Raiders heading into this game are winners to their last three. They beat the Chiefs a few weeks ago. They're coming off their bye week. But at 4-5, probably the most disappointing team in the league, I would say, at this point of the season. A lot of people thought that this team was ticketed for, you know, a deep playoff run. Now it looks like they're put themselves in a position where they can still make a run at the playoffs, but it's going to be difficult. They're going to have to win some games here down the stretch. But overall, you know, when I watched them play the Dolphins, one thing that really stood out to me, especially on offense, was that they're a big physical group. Right. They have a really big offensive line. They have big receivers on the outside, Cooper, Crabtree, Jared Cook, the tight end. Lynch is obviously a beast. You know, a team that can really lean on the Patriots' defense. And I think that that presents a really difficult matchup, maybe more so than some of the other teams that are kind of lighting up the league offensively right now. The Patriots are not a heavy defense. You know, they don't have a lot of big dudes on that defense, especially if a guy like Malcolm Brown is going to be out again. So I think that the Raiders have a chance here to move the ball pretty consistently against the Patriots if they can do things that they haven't done this year, which is, you know, basically execute in doing the little things well. And Derek Carr has just been murdered by drops. You know, one of the most, you know, dropped teams in the entire league in terms of receivers dropping passes. So, you know, I think that he's a little bit on the outside looking in terms of that elite top tier of quarterbacks until he really figures out how to handle pressure better. I was looking up some of the Pro Football Focus numbers. He is 31st out of the 32 qualifying quarterbacks in passer rating under pressure, 37.3. Only Trevor Siemian has a worse number than that. C.J. Beathard has a better number than that. You know, Brock Osweiler is right there with him in terms of that. If this guy is supposed to be this franchise quarterback that everybody wants to build around, he can't be in that conversation with those names, you know. So I think that his play has been okay, but at the same time, when you look at his stats under pressure, like just compared to the Brady's, who are off the charts right now, ridiculous. But he his TD to INT ratio is 0 to 4, and he averages 5.5 yards per attempt when the other team gets pressure. They don't pressure him a lot because the offensive line's really good, as we mentioned. But I think that that's a big reason why this team only averaging 22 points a game and not really living up to that hype on offense, at least.
Right, and you also look at it if you go to the other side of the ball. I just don't see, you know, before the season too, even when I thought the Raiders were going to have a really good year, I thought, well, their defense doesn't really blow me away. And I still kind of feel like it's not really, you know, for a team that has a guy like Khalil Mack, it's only one guy. I don't feel like this is a sort of a defense that can sort of shut down what the Patriots have. So, you know, I think the Patriots have the potential to have another high-scoring game on their hands for their offense. And like you said, it's funny with the Raiders' offense. I just feel like they have such good pieces, and maybe, you know, Derek Carr hasn't been great under pressure, but he's still you know, like a very good quarterback. And you know, the drops have been bad, and they just have the pieces to be so much better. Like if I'm looking at the teams that are going to be in the playoffs this year, like look at the teams that are currently in the playoffs. And, you know, I'm looking at, well, you know, all right, so like the Jaguars are going to be in, right? If it ended today, and like Tennessee and teams like that, if those teams get it going, that's one thing. I kind of feel like the Raiders, if they play up to their potential, are so much more dangerous just because of the sort of star power they have. You know, especially, you know, they've got a better quarterback position. If you were, you know, looking at things, had, you know, Deshaun Watson not gotten hurt, I'd say, okay, Houston's the number one challenger. And all their injuries, like J.J. Watt and Merciless and Deshaun Watson, I'd say, okay, Houston's the team that can knock off the Patriots in the playoffs. the current group, other than, like, you know, the Chiefs and even maybe the Steelers, who haven't even been playing that great, you know, they're in there. But you look at the Raiders, they have the guys. They just haven't played well. So it's important for the Patriots to show they can beat, this team in particular, because I feel like the Raiders have good young talent, good mix of young talent and established stars. And, you know, this isn't some pushover team, because, you know, I feel like there's teams like this sort of happens every year. It feels like where a good team will get off to a really awful start and then they'll figure it out. And then they'll just be, you know, much, much tougher and make the playoffs and put together a run. And I feel like the Raiders are this type of team.
Yeah, I mean, a few weeks ago when they were in the middle of that 4-game losing streak, I really thought that Jack Del Rio and especially offensive coordinator Todd Downing were kind of on the hot seat. You know, this team is way too talented to be a 8-8 team, especially in this AFC. A lot of really bad teams. You know, this, like you mentioned, like, this team is definitely better than the Buffaloes, Miamis, you know, of the world. And those teams are floating right around the same record as these guys are. Buffalo is obviously better than these guys are. So it's hard to believe that a team with all this talent, with that offensive line, that they're paying money to everybody along that offensive line. It's been okay, but it hasn't, been the best offensive line in the league like it was a year ago or close to it a year ago. It's in that conversation with, you know, Tennessee, Dallas, Oakland was kind of the big three last year. This year, you know, okay in pass protection, pretty solid in pass protection, much worse against the on the ground. They're only averaging 88 rushing yards per game the entire season. So against Miami, it looked a little bit better for Marshawn, and he had that nice touchdown run that was kind of vintage Marshawn, where he set up the safety and went right around him. But at the same time, you know, it hasn't really been a factor, the running game for them. I think the passing game over the last 3 weeks or so has really started to pick it up a little bit, and that's kind of what you worry about going against this Patriots team. You know, 417 yards against Kansas City, 295 a couple weeks ago against Miami before their bye. But on the defensive side of the ball, I mean, I just don't see how this Raiders team keeps the Patriots under 30. Khalil Mack is a really, really good player, but he is playing alone this year more than he maybe ever has in his entire career. Mario Edwards, Bruce Irvin, those are the guys that they're kind of trying to put on the other side to kind of give teams a little bit of a threat so they can't just, you know, block Khalil Mack with two or three guys on every play. It's just not happening. You know, it's not happening the way that they want. In the secondary, Carl Joseph, who they drafted a few years ago, is a decent safety. I think that he's a guy that you might see on Gronkowski a lot. And Obi, I'm not going to try to pronounce his last name. I like Obi a lot, but, you know, he's still a rookie, and it doesn't appear like he's coming on as much as some of the other rookie defensive backs that we've seen. They're starting to play him a little bit more now, but he's another big body guy that maybe could play a little bit against Gronkowski too. But I would be, you know, wary of putting a rookie on Gronk. So, you know, it's a defense that's really, really vulnerable. I believe they are 31st in defensive DVOA. The Patriots are 32nd, so I should point that out. But the Raiders and the Patriots are the two worst defenses in the league based on efficiency. So, on paper, this is like setting up to be a 38-34, you know, kind of shootout, so to speak. But I have a funny feeling that the Patriots defense is going to have something up their sleeve to stop this Raiders offense. And I think the Raiders offense also, this is kind of another thing in terms of strategy that the Patriots do. They kind of just let the other team shoot themselves in the foot.
Right.
They kind of just say, okay, we're just not going to give you anything really easy. We're going to tackle well. And we're just going to rely on you to either turn the ball over or have a key drop on third down or a big penalty that stalls a drive or, you know, something along those lines. With the Broncos, it was obviously the special teams. I think that kind of goes hand in hand with what the Raiders have kind of been all season in terms of kind of shooting themselves in the foot with the drops and some of the, you know, little bits of execution that they just haven't caught on to. But in reality, I just think that this is another for the Patriots. You never want to take anything for granted in this league. But if I was picking this game, I would probably pick the Patriots to win pretty comfortably after what they just showed in Denver. Oakland's starting to turn a corner a little bit here, but they kind of let Miami hang in with them a little bit in that last game. And then Kansas City, you know, that game, they came down to the wire too. So they have the two wins that they've had that have kind of have everybody talking them up a little bit, came by a combined 4 points. You know, that's not a lot. So in retrospect, I think that the Patriots should win this game pretty comfortably. And, you know, I expect them to win this game pretty comfortably. And finally, one last guy, Cordarrelle Patterson. Don't sleep on Cordarrelle Patterson. He's going to return kicks. Every once in a while, they throw him in there on offense, and teams forget that he's in there, and they'll actually, like, hand him the ball a few times this season as a running back, and they use him in creative ways when they kind of need a spark on offense, and he's a game-breaker. You know, he's a guy that can really, you know, get a huge play when they need it. And when they were really struggling on offense, they kind of relied on him more to kind of break the game open in different ways. So I think that he's one of those guys that Belichick will certainly be circling and say, hey, if this guy is on the field on offense, we got to know where he's at.
Exactly. It's funny that you mention him because you sometimes forget, even as a fan or as a anything, just that just how fast this guy is. He can burn. Yeah. I remember the first time I saw him when he was at Tennessee. I think he had transferred in from a junior college or something like that. And it was one of those. It was the first game of the year at the Georgia Dome or whatever you call it now. And he caught a pass by the sideline and outran everybody going across the field in a way that you never really see. And so I kind of feel like he's one of those guys that he's not a great receiver, like in terms of running routes and like getting open and catching the ball. But if you could somehow get the ball in his hands, right, he's ridiculous, you know, like, so it's one of those things where you got to be sometimes creative in how you get him the ball, but he can make things happen. I really have always felt like, wow, what an insane talent this guy is. But, you know, he's, you know, in terms of his receiving skills, like he's not like a Cooper. You know, even though Cooper's had some drops, you know, Cooper's been able to use his speed as a receiver in a positive way, where Patterson you just have to manufacture ways to get him the ball. But but if you do get him the ball, you really have to know where he is, like you said, because he is so fast. He's as fast as any of those guys, like a Tyreek Hill, maybe not that fast, but he's in that league. He's in that ballpark.
Right, and when the Vikings drafted him, you know, they drafted him in the first round and he obviously didn't live up to the hype. But one thing that was, you know, pretty clear was that he was a guy that you were going to have to scheme ways to get him the football. Kind of reminds me of like a bigger version of like a Tavon Austin or something like that, where, you know, you're going to have to run gadget plays and run gimmicks to get this guy the ball. In Minnesota, they tried to really make him into a wide receiver and try to see if he could run routes and get open and do stuff like a receiver could. And it just wasn't there for him. You know, it just wasn't his game. But the Raiders have kind of embraced the fact that, hey, this is not a guy that we need to be our number one, number two option. We didn't take him in the first round. You know, we gave him a nice, you know, little payday and free agency, but it certainly wasn't anything that broke the bank. So, you know, ultimately, they were able to just kind of use him in his best way possible. And I think that, you know, on special teams especially, one of the best gunners in the league, also on the punt team. You know, so I've always liked Cordarrelle Patterson, maybe to my, you know, probably not the best guy to put my weight behind, but I've always liked the guy because of that.
Yeah, just how can you not fall in love with that type of speed? I mean,
yeah. I guess I got a little bit of Al Davis in me, you know. I just I see the speed and I just love it. But I really, like I said, just a guy that you got to know where he's at. But overall, I'm gonna make you pick this game because I think I know I said which way I would go, but I want to hear your opinion.
Yeah, I think it's funny. I can see the Patriots winning comfortably, like you said, but I also can see this being sort of a wild shootout where it comes down to the last few minutes, just because I think the Raiders are starting to figure things out a little bit. This kind of has the feel, I don't know if you feel this way too, it has the feeling of a bowl game, like in college. It's at a neutral site. You got these two really talented teams going up against each other. And it's just it's almost like you know when teams play at the Rose Bowl or something like that. There's something special in the air, and I feel like I just sort of get the feeling that it's going to be closer than some of these recent games the Patriots have had. I feel like the Raiders have the opportunity to put some points on the board. They're just explosive, like you said, with Patterson, one play. And you know he can really equal things out.
Yeah, Cooper's like that too. You know, yeah. He had that big 230-yard game against Kansas City.
Right, and I love Crabtree too, and obviously Lynch. You know, so I see a high-scoring game. I see something like a 38, 27, 38, 31, 38, 34, something in that range. I can see like a real type of showcase game here, where these teams really put on a great show in Mexico City.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting little note that the Patriots stayed on the West Coast and they're practicing. Whereas the Air Force Academy, Naval Academy, one of those where it's like 3,000 feet above sea level still. So they played in Denver, obviously. They're really going to be used to this this atmosphere about as much as you can. And, obviously, Estadio Azteca is as high up as it gets, even higher, I believe, than Mile High. So it's that's a huge factor. Oakland is going to be practicing, I believe, just in Oakland, in their traditional practice facility. So it's one of those things where I think it kind of, Belichick, getting ready for the altitude. But it's really true, it's really going to be a factor, I think, in this game. So maybe the Patriots in the fourth quarter have a little bit more gas in the tank than Oakland because of that, specifically. But in all, I really just think that this Oakland defense has no chance to stop the Patriots. No. I don't think the Patriots are going to put up 40. I'd put it at like 35 or 38 just because I think that, it's tough in this league to put up 41 points like they did against Denver every single week, obviously. Yeah. So, I would go maybe like 24, somewhere in that range. But I really think the Patriots are going to win this game pretty comfortably, mainly because this Oakland defense is just really not good and isn't coached up well like the Patriots defense is. I don't know if this Oakland defense probably has just as much talent as the Patriots defense on paper, but they don't have Belichick, so it's right. That's a big difference. But overall, I do, and then we'll sign off, but I do think that there's a mismatch on the outside, especially if Eric Rowe doesn't play in this game. There's going to be a big-bodied receiver on Malcolm Butler a few more times than we want in this game. They have those two guys, Cooper and Crabtree, who are both, 6'2 and above and have big frames, and Crabtree especially is a guy that can go up and get catches, contested catches at the catch point and stuff like that. So see where they put Gilmore, because he's kind of their kryptonite to those two guys. He's kind of the guy that can really shut one of those guys down. The other side, if without Rowe, it's going to be up to Malcolm Butler to probably check Crabtree or Cooper, who's a bigger dude than him. And then Malcolm struggled in the past against some of those bigger guys. So that's definitely something worth monitoring. And I think that the run game of Oakland, even though it's been bad all year, is something worth monitoring too, because this offensive line can really lean on the Patriots defense. And I think if the game script had gone differently for Denver, they might have been able to run the ball even more and even more effectively than they did. But what do you got coming down the road here?
Well, I'm working on a story this week about Calvin Noy, and I really feel like he's a big key to yes. how the defense plays the rest of the year. And so I'll kind of be looking at how versatile he's been in terms of how they've used him and how that can be used the rest of the way, and how important that is now that Hightower's out for the season.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more about Van Noy. I feel like over the last 5 weeks in this defensive turnaround, a lot of it can be, related to Kyle Van Noy's play. He's played a lot better in the last month or so, and the defense has, subsequently played a lot better too. It's not saying that's just him, but the way that they've used him too, using him more on the edge, having him come forward a little bit more and getting him out of some of those coverage responsibilities has really paid major dividends. I got in the Herald tomorrow a remaining strength of schedule piece for the six teams that are in the AFC playoff picture right now. The Patriots, actually, believe it or not, even with the AFC East coming up, have one of the tougher schedules comparatively, especially compared to the Steelers and the Chiefs. Obviously, the two teams that you'd probably expect to be their biggest threats. The Steelers have some cupcake games. Cleveland, week 17, is kind of like a staple of their schedule at this point. Green Bay without Aaron Rodgers, the Texans without Deshaun Watson, and Kansas City has some cupcakes too. So the Patriots have the AFC East. They have the Steelers, big showdown in week 15. But overall, it's a little bit of a tougher schedule, a little bit you know, something to look at, and maybe I think the Patriots are running into form here, but that might be something to look at. And then I'll have the thread going up shortly here tonight. We were talking about it earlier. The game film took forever today to get uploaded, but I'll get that up as well. But that's all the time we have for tonight. Be sure to check out Adam and I's stuff in the Herald this week, and check out the podcast next week before Thanksgiving, already at Thanksgiving here. But we'll be back next week, look at hopefully another Patriots win against Oakland, and of course look ahead to the Miami Dolphins, who at 4-5 somehow are 4-5 despite being 29th in the NFL in point differential. So that should be an interesting game to look at. But until then, signing off for Adam Kirchen, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening to the Naked Bootleg Podcast.